Welcome to Energy Talks, a regular podcast series with expert discussions on power system testing, data management, cybersecurity, and important trends in the power industry. Hello, everyone. My name is Scott Williams from the podcast team at Omicron. This episode covers another interesting topic about cybersecurity and focuses on security risk assessments performed during construction projects in the energy sector. Your host for this episode is Simon Romer, who is an OT security consultant in the Omicron Power Utility Communications team. Simon asks his guests questions about the recommended security risk assessments and whether they are advisable in the early design phases of construction projects. So without further delay, I hand over the microphone to Simon. Hi, Simon.
Thank you, Scott. I welcome our listeners to this new episode of our podcast, where we explore the critical roles of IT and OT in power system cybersecurity. This episode, we are going to talk about security risk assessments from a design and construction point of view. For this, my guest is José Paredes, who is a regional engineering manager at HNMV Engineering. HNMV Engineering is a global leader in high voltage design, engineering, and construction services. We will talk about José's experience as an engineer manager and how he sees the key steps of a successful project with all security-related engineering requirements fulfilled. José, welcome to this episode of Energy Talks.
Hi, Simon. Thank you for having me.
First of all, how was the development during the last few years and what made you want to talk about this topic?
First of all is the knowledge gaps. That's the knowledge gap we have between the IoT and the electrical engineering part. That was caused us a lot of issues in the beginning. Remember, I started this journey like more than 3 years ago. And we always, as a company, we're always trying to design our systems in a secure manner. But with the implementation of all the new cybersecurity rules, we have to comply in Europe and in the UK in particular, that is the region I am in charge. We have to step up by being along this journey with the company and the different other clients, how they're going to implement all these new rules.
So you say that it's external motivated and basically your customers force you, if you want to say it in a hard way like this, to have cybersecurity as part of your services. I'm sure that the NIS and the upcoming NIS 2 are big parts of that as well.
Yeah, it's all depending on the client requirements. The way it works in our company is the client, we basically are tendering constantly to different type of projects around all Europe and different regions because we had work in the Middle East and the UK and Ireland and when our offices are based. But it's all depending on the client requirement. And we notice in the previous years, the client requirements are asking more and more about cybersecurity in particular. This particular case I brought to you that kick off my own learning is it was a project in the UK and they have very demanding cybersecurity requirements. And even though it doesn't require to us to be compliant or produce a compliant design, it requires us to follow 62443 guidelines and do good practices. Also, the UK have a different documentation that we have to as a standard design for. But that's basically committed. They say the clients, this is what the client wants, and our company is client-driven, client-first, and we try to fulfill what our clients want from us.
This sounds very complicated in the beginning because you said you are responsible for the UK and you have like your own legislature, and then there is parts of your company that work in the Middle East that there is like a different legislature. I'm sure internationally diverges quite a bit from the NIS. I think one of the major points is always the 62443. It's a staple in our industry.
Yes. What I've seen is every region has its own rules. Even though we all in the European zone, every country has its own rules every of our projects needs to follow. I particularly deal with the UK, but Ireland has its own, Germany has its own, Scandinavia has its own. And we are noticing a little, every country is at a different level of this journey. Countries like the UK are very far ahead, as I might say. Germany, of course, like always, is in the forefront of this stuff with Kitris and that type of stuff. But it is, like you said, everyone have to now comply with NIS 2 in Europe. And for example, I have other projects that also have to comply with American standard because the products they are installing are American and they have to comply with NIST. That is another set of rules. Yeah, and part of when we get the projects, we start reading through the ER. We need to check what are our requirements we need to comply. And as a company, we're developing a whole set of procedures, or we have developed a set of procedures to deal with all these eventualities. And it all depends. Some clients don't want that. Some clients are very advanced. Some clients have very... Basically, they handle the cybersecurity themselves. They put panels that they call them. They can have whatever name, but some plan, let's call it for the purpose of this discussion, enterprise cabinet that they put in our site, and they handle all the DMZ zones and the cybersecurity themselves. Other clients, like the one we're going to discuss a little further, HNMB, basically they quote HNMB to produce that for them. And that's something, like I said, we are client-driven, and we just... And that's usually how it works in most of our projects. And that's the way we have gone into battery storage systems and solar systems and wind farms and data centers. So we have a big range of all different type of projects we deal with.
So your mentality is like, say yes first and ask questions later?
Well, I wouldn't say it like that. We do have certain rules of products we don't engage. For example, power plant control of battery storage and solar parks, we don't. That's not our specialty. We depend off specialist companies to do that for us in our behalf. As a company, we have learned that it's so difficult to do that we particularly don't want to, if a client wants it. And sometimes clients tell us, no, you have to take everything if you want this project. And then we as a company, as a business, decide to let's go ahead with the project and take the risk and figure it out as we go. And that's the only way you get into the forefront of stuff, Simon.
We both know that good partners are very valuable in this case. So if you have a tender where you don't have all the expertise in-house, a good partner is always valuable. You mentioned requirements. What experience do you have with security requirements during construction projects? And you also mentioned that it's getting more and more because of regulations and requirements from the customers. So how do you see this topic?
Well, like I mentioned in the beginning, is that gap between the IoT world and the electrical engineering world that is the most difficult part we have encountered. For example, an electrical commission, an engineer might know how to program a relay, might know, but they won't know about the protocols to be used. They won't know what, and they might know what a 61850 is because that's a protocol we use in this industry, but they might not know what the data center use, like MQTT and that type of things. And that is what the knowledge gap here. Knowledge gap is, there is also a lot of the new elements are moving into virtualization now, server-based protection and service-based security. And that gap to how to deal with those IoT devices is one of the main hurdles where we're encountered at this point. And also the standard had not been working together. For example, we work in the protection and control where, for example, they have their own set of rules, their own set of protocols, their own set ways to do things. And the IoT worlds have their own. And at the moment, we have a discrepancy between both. But because things like NIS2, they don't care. They just, if you have a network, you have to protect it, you have to encrypt it, you have to do certain things that are not compatible with the protection and control work for just putting it that way. And a specific example, if you want to know, is, for example, 62443 asks to encrypt all the networks in a system. As you get into what is 61850, that is the protocol used for the control and protection system relays, and that network should not be encrypted, because that will cause delays and increase in latency. And remember, we're talking a very fast acting devices, sometimes what is called real-time network. So it's not advisable. It's possible, but not advisable. So that's, for example, one example when the standards clash between each other, because how do you comply with a requirement when you're trying to achieve compliance and doing your risk assessment? That's a risk it will be identified. You cannot encrypt this, and then how do you do it? And at the end, you can't. You have to mitigate the risk, acknowledge the risk, and put it into the risk assessment.
So especially where you said, for example, the virtualization with 61850, you have virtual substations, which is like virtualization all the way through. This brings me also to an interesting point that you said the standards clash. So how do security assessments help with this?
Well, in this particular project, and that's why what you mentioned before, having good partners, I get to know Omicron services and server security was thanks to that. I was looking at a partner to help us harder this treacherous path, I'll say. And the design risk assessment is like a key element of all this stuff, because the standards give it a whole set of rules and what should we check and what level we should achieve. And that's what the first thing I learned, because that's another problem, Simon, is the clients sometimes have expectations. Depending who wrote your client requirements or your employee requirements might come from the IoT world and they say, I know I want everything level 4, but we know that in practice that's not achievable.
Just for listeners, we're talking about security level 4 as mentioned in the 62443. So security level 4 is basically nation state, triple letter agency security.
Yes, and in this case, particular case, that's the expectation from our client was extremely high and we have to taper it down. And the cybersecurity risk assessment were extremely helpful for that because it put into context and in paper what actually we need to achieve. And for example, in this case, we identified that level 2 is more than sufficient for an infrastructure of this type. The project we're basically discussing and do today was a 400 kilovolt or 400 kV station for a solar and BESS park. It was a mixed type of park, the first of its class in the UK. Very complicated interface because there are so many other companies. We have a solar company, we have a battery company, we have a power plant control company, HNMV, and all these companies have to interact and connect and talk to each other securely. And the risk assessment was very useful to identify what actually level we need to achieve and how to get it done. And the cybersecurity helped us to do that, identify all the gaps and what, how to cover them. And Omicron was helpful in that regard, that they also advised us to what elements we need to cover and how. That's why having a good partner in this regard is very useful.
So this also sounds like that you rather do the thought experiment, if you want to call it like this, or like the assessment in itself, rather sooner than later, because if you're already in construction phase, you can't really change anything anymore.
Yeah, one of the things we learned is that you need to have your cybersecurity partner or your internal team, if you are in that case, you need to involve as early as possible into the design stage, because one of the first deliverables we need to produce, at least HNMB work that way, is our topology drawing where all the networks are laid out. Even way before you have your Purdue model done. It's important to have your security partners a little during design because that is, it will help you to identify any gaps in the very beginning when you haven't bought anything, because the main stopover of our achieving cybersecurity on site is buy the equipment. We need to avoid buying the equipment, incorrect equipment, or the equipment is not powerful enough. This is a particular situation I had that when we went through the design, we identified we have so many parties to need to connect to our station, and then the hardware we select to allow those VPN connections weren't powerful enough to handle all the incoming traffic. So that's what is important, to get yourself a partner and to help you during the design, to develop the topologies and the Purdue model as early as possible. Whether you are willing to, or not willing, but able to put it together. So,
but this also sounds, I mean, we worked on the same project or we worked on some project before. And another point that I noticed is it's really helpful having the security team early on is doing some kind of lobbying within the stakeholders. So sometimes the customer doesn't even know what he wants, what he needs. And during the security assessment, there is some gaps showing and you have to lobby for enough funding, or you can say, okay, this is a risk we can accept, and so on and so forth.
Yes, depending on the type of project, if you're looking contractually, it is a problem. In other type of project, it's not too much, but in the type of project we normally handle, there are projects that already have set funding done. It's a type of contract that don't allow. I know that the contract have mechanisms to do variations and so on, but that's a no-no in this world. At least in the construction, you need to minimize your variations from your contractors to us. And going with the incorrect approach from the beginning causes that in the end, when you do the risk assessment, that is usually an activity in the end, you might, you need a jump host, or you miss a firewall here, you need to put it in there. So doing the risk assessment early enough will help you to identify and do the segmentation properly and make sure all your contractors will join you. Because remember, you need to remember that a lot of the contractors come at different stages during the construction process. Yeah, and usually cybersecurity is an activity you do in the end when you have all the procurement and all the parties in the table. But if you do it early, you can prepare your specifications properly with all the necessary hardware, because it's usually the main problem is the hardware you need. Getting a device could take weeks, like if you're not talking months now, and that's usually a problem, that you need to get your devices on time, and then you need to achieve an energization date that you cannot because you are not ready. A lot of our countries have clauses and said, you need to be ready by energization date, or this certain amount of elements need to be. And that's a very broad statement, but cybersecurity is part of that. You need to have all your IoT in place and live to be to fight energization that for us to get paid. Another thing that is important is your utility layman, or in a simplified way to see this, is your utility need to see your station through all the IoT devices we set up in place, with your all the SCADA system, all the RTUs, everything need to be in place. And in at the same time, you're trying to figure it out how to get a firewall rule in place and a networking rule in place. It's not something you want at that stage. When you are energizing and trying to get paid, you need to have this should be the last thing you're thinking about it.
So security tries to never be a showstopper, but sometimes you have to mention things that you can't really accept. And for me, it sounds like that having these considerations early on keep you from having to backtrack and having to buy additional or more powerful hardware.
Yeah, in construction, like delays is the bad word. You should not mention delays. Of course, cost is important, but sometimes costs are associated with delays. But sometimes delays is much more problematic, because when you delay a project, it's not about the cost of the hardware. There's a cost of the people, the cost of the equipment you have inside, your cabins, your toilets, your a lot of other things. And that's what delays is something you should avoid. And we have learned the hard way that cybersecurity can delay you if not done properly at the beginning.
Or the missed opportunity costs of having the plant running for a week.
Exactly. Especially in the generation side, having the plant not running, that's actually a good point. Having the plant not running for a day is costly, and also have fines that us, HNMB as a company, is responsible for if we are not energizing, and then the client is losing revenue. So legally, by contract, we are the responsible. So that's what I say, energization date is one of the most important things, and you don't want cybersecurity to be one of your showstoppers. So,
just from a cybersecurity point of view, we don't want that either. So there's no security press that say, I want to delay this project. So I always mention that we are the good guys. We are service contractors. We are service people. We try to provide a service, and we try to help bring the project forward. In your opinion, what are the key stepping stones to a successful project then?
First is, like we mentioned, having the right partner, because like not other companies are helpful in that regard. Some companies that in my own experience are very process-driven. This is the standard. This is the step you need to follow. And sometimes you need to be a little flexible. And that's one of the main stopovers.
So the standard needs to be interpreted as well.
Having the... Why do they make a stepping stone? Or the key points are having the gaps identified. That's one of the things, one of the most valuable things, and that's what is important to do early. Because we are electrical or power engineers, all our company in particular, and we might not know at the time, and our tender department that's also might not be aware of one-liners in the employee requirements. For example, in one case, one line in the employee requirements say we have to develop HNMB have to produce information security policies for the client. This is a humongous task I learned after. So our tender department didn't thought how big or how difficult this task ended up being. And now we know now that it's a very intensive task. You need to have a specialist people who are doing this one, and a specialist person, even internally or through a subcontractor. And that's what I mean. Identify the gaps is the most important thing if you are thinking in the cybersecurity. And that also helps you to identify the hardware. And also all these minute lines is written in the employee requirements about that, for example. That was an example. Something is just a line on the employee requirement that is a mammoth task. It's a very difficult task to do.
Especially with the policies. Is there something that the customer writes into the requirement where you say, okay, this cannot be done by a subcontractor. This cannot be done by us. And the customer wants it to have done by the construction company, but they cannot physically do it because it has to be done by the owner.
Yeah, that's something I learned working with you guys. The client tend to drop onto us as their partner, as their contractor as well. They're trying to drop into some items that are their responsibility. That's something learned. That's why cyber the risk assessment is so important to do it, or to start laying it out early enough, because you can identify that, okay, H&MB should not be responsible for this. Why? Well, for example, there is a third-party equipment that is not even procured. It's a free issue from the client, and the client not even bought it. So how do you assess that a device you didn't design? Or better say, how us as a company could be responsible for something we haven't designed? There's a lot of intricacies you identify. As far as the gap, identifying the gaps is one of the most important thing of thinking about the cybersecurity in barely enough. Another thing it can help you is to identify suitable contractors. Now we need to work toward getting an IS2 compliant site, even though we don't have to comply by our contract. But there are some contractors that are very far behind the journey. And we know now that I cannot work with them anymore because they need to step up themselves the same way as we did. And also they have to go through their own journey. That's very important as well when you are identified that certain contractors cannot work with you anymore. If, for example, we are H&MB is a ISO 7001 compliant or certified company. So there is certain rules that our contractors need to comply as well as us. So, and that's where we start. You start navigating that part that the market becomes smaller and smaller because not every company can work on every level. As you can imagine, this is a critical infrastructure. All our stations and generation structure, critical infrastructure for the country we are. So you need to maintain that level of subcontracting.
Yeah, we as Omicron, we had the same topic last year, where we had to do the ISO 27001 exactly for this reason, because we are working in critical infrastructure and it's just mandatory. If you don't have the certification, you can close shop and go home.
Yeah, in the UK in particularly, and the listeners car, forgive me if I'm wrong, but there is a certain level of, if your revenue is a certain amount or the type of project you're trying to try to achieve is a certain amount of money, then you need to have certain certification. And 7001, for example, is one that is mandatory for the companies at this level. NIS2 is something everybody have to comply. And that's a problem companies will start facing, that you might not be able to get work because you are not complying with, or not compliant, but at least you are not certified to get this. And there will be a point when even the equipment we buy need to be 62443 certified. And that we're from, but the moment we work with certain partners that they do have that, we are now requesting if it's possible. But for example, protection and control companies, to not say any names, some of them don't have it. And they don't plan. They say, it's in the pipeline. It's in the pipeline. Yeah, but I need the device today. Not in 3 years' time when you say you will have it. So that is one of the hurdles we're trying to navigate at this point.
Yeah, this sounds like a major pitfall, in my opinion. And you talked about some issues and some complications already. Can you expand a little bit further on these type of issues that occur?
Sure. One, in the hardware point of view, is simple. Like some, depending on the type of contract, sometimes you have, you have to provide me, the client, with a compliant site. So if you have that type of terminology, that means that all the devices you're putting in need to be compliant. As some of you work in the protection and control industry, some suppliers of relay equipment are not, I don't say all the devices are, but some devices are not compliant. So you need to avoid them. Okay, I need compliance. So that limits the type of companies you can use for your networking, for your protection and control. In the networking, it's easy enough. Most companies who provide networking equipment have this, but not all companies who provide protection and control equipment have it. And that's what is important. Not every project need to be compliant. And I notice now at this point, clients are not start tapering down what they say written into the employee requirements. They are not mentioned compliancy, but they say, you need to follow CC442. So that gives us a little flexibility. And that's what the risk assessment coming back again, being an invaluable tool to identify the gaps, mitigate whatever risk are identified, and then everything remnant risk is the client responsibility to own or manage in that case. Another thing that is very important in the beginning, it is very important in the very beginning, Simon, is to agree the level with the client. Most of the employee requirement doesn't say what level they want. They want the best, and we're trying to give them the best, but it's also a reasonable expectation what is actually achievable or not.
It's also always a cost factor. So if you want to have a higher security level, it costs you more money, it costs you more manpower, it costs you more time. And sometimes you don't have any of those things.
Yeah, we have learned recently now to price our projects in that level. Ah, you want a level 2, this is what you get. You want a level 3, this is what it will cost you. It has been a good experience in that regard because now we know very accurately how to price what we're delivering. We have learned now that level 2 is more than enough for an infrastructure of this type. Some clients are very advanced. They deal with nuclear plants and stuff in the region, and then they want everything to be in a common platform. But in fairness, those clients have their own enterprise infrastructure already in place. So we only think I just come in, ensure that my device, my high voltage SCADA, for example, have all the necessary switches and all the necessary resemblance. And just give me connect here. And I just come in with my LAN or my fiber and connect to what they tell me to do. Those are the best clients to work for because they know about cybersecurity. They tell you more or less what they want very clearly. And it's very easy for us to implement. The more difficult clients when it's very vague, and they just think that putting a bunch of buzzwords into the employee requirement is enough. I have another client that they literally put all the cybersecurity standards around the world, like American, European, Chinese. It's like, especially when they are working with American manufacturers that want to install equipment in the Europe, the American manufacturer will follow the American standards. So. And then we need to tell them, hey, you're in Europe now, you need to follow these rules and your devices might not be. But in fairness, the Americans are as advanced, if not more than that in Europe in that regard. So
it's not always as well what you want, but also what you need sometimes of the clients. They don't know what they need because of legislature, for example. And for us in Europe, we have the NIS2 or we don't have the NIS2. Do we have it already? Nobody knows. But it always comes down to, is the expectation of what the client wants and what the client needs, is it the same? And this can also be shown in the security risk assessment.
Yeah, that is also difficult to handle. Telling the client what he needs, sometimes it goes well, sometimes they listen to you as the expert, the same way we listen to our contractors. Sometimes they just stick, no, you sign this contract, this is what you have to deliver, and that's what it is. We are in a very difficult, I wouldn't say difficult, but we're in a challenging situation with another client that is, their requirements are very demanding. They are requiring they're basically requiring compliance and also include to have a penetration testing and all this, basically go through the standard and check every item is covered. And that's not just costly, it's time consuming, like I say, delays. You want to avoid delays. And they are not agreeing to a level. So everything is line by line. So it's very difficult in that particular regard. So getting to your level agreed in the beginning, that's one of the most important things.
Yeah, so it's not only the security levels, but also like not have many meetings, but have the meetings really impactful and write down what you agreed on and discuss the other points that you're not agreed on already. This is still really important.
Yeah, in the project we worked together, it was difficult in that regard because we don't even knew what protocols we want to use. So some of them we will use IEC 104, or others want to see 150. Then there is the external that might use MQTT or IPI. And then there is the odd contractor that just want RPS, a remote desktop. That is a big no-no. And I remember when you guys went to our site, you guys find a lot of wireless networks open to anybody to connect. That was a big no-no, and that's something we have to tell because a lot of the, especially what is called route to market services that you can find in different countries, they tend to be wireless. And then you need to tell it, no, you are not allowed. You are behind my DMZ zone. You are not allowed to have a wireless network. I give you an IP when you can connect and I open the necessary ports you need, but you cannot do that. And then all my services are cellular. I don't need a LAN connection. I understand, but how do we fly through this? And there are some other clients that not even allow the typical, probably if you work with a data center and then you tell them, hey, because in the data center world, they are the enterprise, they control your accesses to the site, but then the utility, hey, I connect through Modbus. you need to give me a Modbus, open the port, and then the data center will null in a million years and allow you. For, say, an example, I have a situation like that the protocols I need to talk to the utility were not allowed by the data center, and then, okay, what do I do? So we need to put it in basically a physical backdoor that a different, we have to bring a separate fiber because the data center will not allow the utility to use their comm systems to obtain all the, to achieve grid compliance, because that's another thing. Grid compliance is a very important thing. And we haven't talked too much about it because that is cybersecurity bring another problem. Our power industry, that is latency. Actually, we didn't touch it at all. Latency is one, a major, depending on the region you are, latency is as important as the power you are delivering. You need to be able to respond fast to the instructions from the utility and from the market. The client just care to sell and buy the power and the time is correct. But the utility, sometimes in the UK in particular, have very short response times to comply with the grid. And cybersecurity turn a lot on that because if you guys, your listener might know, all the cybersecurity rule and firewall include latency into the network. So sometimes you just have 200 milliseconds to go into a certain point of the network. And then now your signal have to pass through several layers of firewalls and devices and processing time. It's very difficult to achieve. That's why it's very important to identify also the many levels as well. How many levels you have, that's something you need to learn to manage and combine, and because you need to minimize the level, to minimize the level of latency between each level. And it was something we learned as well in that one, that during our FATs, for example, become part of standard of our procedures to check latency tests now in our devices. Even I might be checking an SCADA system, but the SCADA system, I told them, hey, push a signal and tell me the time, how much took the machine to actually, and we're talking about 10 milliseconds, but 10 milliseconds on top of 10 milliseconds, 10, 10, 10, it will get, and you might not be able to comply. That varies depending on the country. Some countries don't have those requirements. The UK in particular is very keen on response time. And that's something you never think about it, Simon, until you're actually trying to get a grid compliance test in the end, and then you notice that you are not responding at the time the grid demands.
There was a lot to unpack here. One of the major things that straight jumped at me was having the Modbus in data center. Sometimes the data center doesn't even know what Modbus is, which can get like really interesting. But you also said it's like a physical backdoor, and it really is a physical backdoor. And there comes all, again, the security risk assessment on a smaller scale. It's not a real an assessment, but it's like you have to assess if this backdoor is necessary and if we can live with the risks. So the security risk assessment is not always a full-blown risk assessment according to 62443, but it can be certain situations that need to be assessed and then they need to be written down and, okay, we accept this risk, this can happen, we are going to do this against the bad things happening. But what we talked about was past experience and then current projects. What I'm interested in is how will these experiences impact your future or your approach for future projects?
I kind of mentioned it before. Like I said, one of the main things like that, having your partner with you early enough during your design stage, that's one. Also, is like I said, I agreed very early with your level as soon as possible. And thinking about the topics I told you about, thinking about your latency, how many levels you have. So at the moment, it's now we have our internals procedures that we are developing to apply to all our sites, and we will have different type of site. And when a site require, okay, this site need to be compliant, we already have our procedures in place to make sure our client is happy what we are delivering. For example, we have developed a password policies compatible with, because if you see, if I use my own company policies, we use systems like SharePoint and Autodesk packages to do their work, and we have our own password policy. For example, the one I used to log into the computer that we are talking now. But if you work with this type of devices like relays and protection system, they don't have, for example, two-step authentication that I do have for in my personal computer. So our power policies now reflect all those type of intricacies. Another thing is about system hardening. Even though we are very experienced in this field, system hardening is a very important thing now, making sure you clock the port, you close your port, set up your users, having user control. One of the main things we have identified, Simon, is now the division between the handover and not handover. During construction, there is a day called the handover day. It's the time you pass the site to your client, to our client, sorry, and having all those stuff documented is very important from the handover process. So part of the handover process is to hand over all the passwords, all the users, and also the client might want to us to set up who will be the end user, all the protocols, if we have to write an API to communicate with any of the devices, we need to pass all that information. So the handover day is very important, and also that is the day when everything, the cybersecurity risk assessment identified, it need to be closed and locked down. And that is the day that the client received the risk assessment and acknowledged all the remnant risk. Because, you know, every project have a remnant risk. It's like in the high voltage, you all will have a voltage at risk of electrocution because it's electricity. What can you do? Exactly. So it's common that the client will accept some risks. And depending what industry we're talking about, like I said, data centers are more restrictive. A power industry is a little more restrictive. But if you're working with nuclear system, it's different. And it depends. So the handover is a very important, and be prepared for that date. That's something we learn during this journey, is be prepared for that date and making sure all our policies. And that's something we have learned. And at the moment, we basically have several set of policies. And one is when we are the owners of the site, we are handling the cybersecurity, and when we handle to the client. So the way we handle to the client is the one to have to comply with the employer requirements. But the ones is when we are controlling it, it has to follow our own internal procedure. That's another thing, Sam, that is very different, because when H&MB or a company like us is owning the site, is building it, they need to comply with our own internal cybersecurity policies that could be very different what the client is asking us to do. That's something that we pop up during all this journey. For example, I'll give you a specific example. A relay will not need a password and a user control during construction, because, you know, it's construction. You are uploading configuration, you are doing testing. So having a strong password policies might be not necessary on that one. The standards don't care about any of that. So at the moment, we have a discussion like, do we need to have all these password policies, for example, implemented during construction or not? Are you authorized to be on site or not?
Sometimes, as you mentioned, the example with the password, it can hinder the work even. So it's not only that you have to do it or it doesn't make sense, but if you have the password policy in place early on, it hinders the work and it gives you steps to go through, and like it takes longer to test stuff and to upload stuff. And then we get back to delaying again. And also with the risk acceptance, it always depends what kind of risk. So for example, with the electrocution, you will not accept risk that is related to safety, but sometimes you will accept risk that is related to IT when you're in this type of space.
Yeah, and at the point, as the clients get more advanced, they know that some risks are acceptable, other risks are non-negotiable. A specific is having a remote 24/7 remote desk on an RDP protocol open. That's unacceptable now. I know that now. So I cannot work with contractors that rely on that type of platform or type of protocol for their work. I need to find someone who maybe will put in an RTI, you know, a remote interface cabinet there, that they will, and that way we create that cybersecurity gap. That is very important. That's what the DMZ zone firewall is for, to create that gap. And I learned that in the IoT world, there are many ways to crack an egg. So you always find a way or someone who knows how to do it.
That's the bad thing with being a defender. A defender has to be always right, has to be right 100% of the times. And an attacker has to be right just once and you're through the layer. So that's why having a good risk assessment is also important, to identify all the possible cracks. So if there is one key message that you want to give our listeners, what would it be?
Be aware of the procurement impact on your sites. Make sure you have the right hardware early enough on time. It's just, as many of your listeners might know, especially if you work in the construction industry, the lead times for equipment have longer and longer. These IoT devices seems to be getting longer delivery time. And sometimes you think you might get, I can get this device in 3 weeks. But then when you find out, no, it's 16 weeks. And that's the message we want to say. Just be aware you have, or be sure you have all the necessary hardware you have. And also if the hardware is powerful enough, what you need to achieve. That's another item that we learn along the way, that's having a server. Okay, cool. I have a server, probably. It's not the same having a Celeron GPU than having a Xeon GPU. That's very important. And sometimes you depend on their specialist to tell you that, or the company you're working on to tell you that, and others don't. Another, there are many things in the market that I can help you to achieve. Like Omicron have like the Station Guard and the Station Count and these type of devices that help with all the stuff. and make sure what is in the market is also helpful. Like, yeah, procurement, that's, I think, the most important thing, to have the necessary software and hardware and licenses. Now I learned that recently that I need licenses for all this everything we have been talking about. Now you need to think about OPEX costs that would never be part of it, like relays and protection system working single licenses that you buy once and leave it there for 20 years. Now that's changing. Now with centralized protection and virtualized protection, now you have to think about hypervisor and all the stuff you need licenses. All firewalls work with licenses as well. Now you need to think about it. So there are now OPEX costs. They're building on top of each other. So,
and this is all stuff that has to be considered during a risk assessment.
Of course, yeah. Because the clients might not think it's important and they might decide not to pay for the yearly cost that are really that a firewall has. And all the firewall companies now do that. I wouldn't say all of them, but most of the most important work in licenses system based and all this advanced feature, our cybersecurity risk assessment is depending on, suddenly start disappearing because the clients say, this is not, I don't need this. I'll get it for a year. And after that, it's fine. That's something need to be noticed in the risk assessment.
And with that, thank you, Jose, for joining me in this discussion about the role of security risk assessments while building infrastructure and sharing your viewpoint on the matter.
Okay, thank you for having me.
And with that, I give back to Scott.
Thank you very much, Simon, for hosting this episode and your discussion with Jose about security risk assessments during construction projects in the energy sector. We really look forward to your next episodes and discussions with your guests about cybersecurity topics. And to our audience, a big thank you for listening to this and other episodes of Energy Talks. We always welcome your questions and feedback. Please send us an email to podcast@omicronenergy.com. Omicron has several years of experience in power system testing, data management, and cybersecurity, and offers a matching solution for your application. For more information, please visit our website at omicronenergy.com. Please be sure to join us for the next episode of Energy Talks. Goodbye for now, everyone.